On this episode of The Big Number, we dive into the stats to try to answer these questions. Should the Miami Heat trade Jimmy Butler right now? And if so, where does it make the most sense for him to go? That and more coming up right now. Welcome to The Big Number. This is the show every Thursday at Yahoo Sports where we dive into the numbers on one big topic, one big trend in the NBA. I'm Tom Haberstroh, and that is our man, Dan Devine. What's up, Dan?
Who knows, Tom? You know, my kids matter, my happiness matters, my well-being matters, and my family matters. So right now, it's all about competing, staying healthy, and just doing some great podcasting. I think I've done that so far, so we'll see what we've got, and whatever happens from here happens from here. Tom, what's our big number this week?
Our big number is about the Miami Heat's latest trade available player guy, Jimmy Butler. This week's big number is plus 3.6. That is Jimmy Butler's estimated plus minus his EPM, which is top 25 in the league, actually 23rd if we're being precise. EPM is basically an all-in-one metric over at dunksandthrees.com by Taylor Snar. It is a fantastic website. If you're an NBA head like us, if you're sickos and you want to jump into the numbers and predict how the NBA is going to be, that site is as good as you'll find on the internet. And they are, you know, crunching the numbers on Jimmy Butler and saying that based on his skill set, based on his age curve, based on how the Miami Heat had played with him on the floor, without him on the floor, all of this stuff in the kitchen sink, it's pointing to Jimmy Butler still at age 35, Dan, as one of the top 25 players in the NBA, which is not just backward looking, it's forward looking. He is an all-star, all-NBA caliber player. So he is, according to Shams Charania at ESPN, he is now on the trade block. I mean, they can say it's not the trade, but they're not trying to trade the Jimmy Butler. But according to Shams Charania, his report on this Tuesday said basically this guy's going to walk at the end of the free agency this summer. He can be a free agent. He's got $48 million owed to him this year. And next year, he's going to waive that, basically turn down his player option and become a free agent. And the Miami Heat are like, yo, we don't want to let Jimmy walk for nothing. So we're going to go into this and say, you know what? Let's make him available. And that might seem weird to people who are like, wait, this guy's a top 25 player in the NBA. He's a guy who went to the NBA Finals, put the Miami Heat on his back and carried them to two finals trips in 2020 and in 23 against the Denver Nuggets. And the Miami Heat are still competing at a high level. They're coming off a three-game win streak in which they beat the pants off of the Los Angeles Lakers, a 41-point win there. They go and they beat the Phoenix Suns by 10, the Cleveland Cavaliers by 9, three decisive victories in the past week. They're on a three-game win streak. Why now? Here's why. Two reasons. Trade eligibility. There are trade restrictions that are being lifted by free agents who signed with their teams this summer. That's December 15th, this coming Sunday. And then next week's Winter Showcase in Orlando, all the G League executives, teams, and their parent organizations, they're going to be descending upon Disney World to essentially schmooze, gossip, talk turkey. And that would be a great time to discuss Jimmy Butler trade options. And I will tell you this. He is the biggest enigma in the NBA. Like Jimmy Butler, what he does in the regular season versus in the postseason, what his hair is doing, what music he's listening to, what ads he's going to do on the national campaigns. He is one of the most hard to pin down characters in the league. And I can encapsulate this in one stat. In the regular season in a Miami Heat uniform, Dan, Jimmy Butler has a 38% field goal percentage in clutch situations. In the regular season, he's shooting 17% on threes in the regular season. Clutch situations, meaning game within final five minutes, fourth quarter overtime. In the regular season, he ranks among 53 players with at least 200 shots over the last six seasons in the regular season. Jimmy Butler ranks 53rd out of 53 players in effective field goal percentage in clutch situations.
Oof. That's not what I expected to hear, given how Jimmy is a top 25 player, Tom. Surely there's got to be some kind of reason that you would bring that up.
Playoff Jimmy. That's wrong,
Dan. Oh, right. That other guy. The guy who he says is 100% not a thing. So if he's telling us it's not a thing, then it mustn't be a thing, Tom.
Oh, of course, because Jimmy Butler, he's always, you know, a straight shooter. He's that Texas, that Tomball Texas guy who's just never saying something kind of passive aggressive or kind of wink, wink, nudge, nudge. This dude, Playoff Jimmy, is a real thing. If you look at those same numbers, his clutch performance in the postseason, he is one of the best players in clutch time in the NBA. Over the last six seasons, basically when he's with the Miami Heat in the postseason, among the players with 30 plus attempts in clutch situations, he ranks eighth among the 23 players, 8 out of 23. He's a guy who in the postseason has 8 40-point games as a member of the Miami Heat and 0 in the regular season. That's right. All 8 of his 40-point games are in the postseason. I mean, the guy is kind of just such a character in the league. He's hard to pin down, but we know that when the lights are brightest in the postseason, he is as good as they come. Another stat for you. He ranks top 5. He is 5th in the postseason player efficiency rating over the last 6 seasons. That's also true for win shares per 48. That's also true for box plus minus. Basically, anything you look at, he goes from a top 25 player to basically a top 5 player in the postseason. And that, my friends, is why the Miami Heat are saying, let's go check out the market for this guy. He might walk at the end of this season. We want to get something back for him at the trade deadline. We got all these executives coming and schmoozing and over beers talking about these trade possibilities. What better time than now to put him on the trade block? I think he's the best player on the trade block or seemingly available in the NBA. I put it to you there, Dan. Should the Miami Heat trade Jimmy Butler right now?
I'm a little bit more given to sentiment, I think, than Pat Riley. I think that's probably fair to say. Not that Pat Riley is not somebody who's heavily emotional, but like perhaps not ruled by his emotions in the same way that I am, or that Emo Jimmy might be ruled by his emotions in some capacities. So I look at it and I'm like, that guy has been one of your sort of franchise icons and is responsible for some of the bigger moments in your franchise's history. Now, the Heat as a franchise can say, like, it's not really at that level unless it delivers a championship, because we are a championship organization, the heritage of Dwayne Wade and Shaq through LeBron and the Big Three and so on. But, like, that organization was dipping pretty significantly, and then Jimmy came in and then elevated back to multiple finals appearances and consistent postseason relevance and success, deep runs. So, like, to me, I'm like, that's a guy I don't like, you know, of sort of moving off your Saints too early. I understand that's maybe not the nature of the modern game, but I think that's, for me, I probably would say, like, let's let it run out, see if we can maybe capture lightning in a bottle one more time. As you mentioned, 3-game winning streak, which in the East might as well be a 25-game winning streak at this point. but, you know, the Heat, we say this pretty much year after year, they look up at the top of the standings and they're looking at Boston and Cleveland and New York and Milwaukee, or Orlando. I'm guessing that Jimmy Butler and Eric Spoelstra and company are not particularly afeared of any of those teams. And I would say, like, we feel like we got a real shot if we got our guys healthy. We got Bam Adebayo on the floor with Jimmy and Tyler Herro. So, like, to me, I look at it and say, I would probably see them as competitors saying, like, let me give it one more run. Let this offseason be what this offseason is. Jimmy's apparently going to test free agency. Maybe there's years over annual dollar value kind of deal that can be arrived at. If he's still super productive at this top 25, top 15 kind of level when he's entering his age 35 season, maybe there's some business to be done there. But I understand that business is the operative word. This is not necessarily how the NBA goes. So if you're looking to maximize what your return is on a player who has said he might, you know, be eyeing greener pastures, where the last couple of seasons it goes from 53 wins to 44 wins in the finals to 46 wins and you're out in the first round to barely above 500 right now. And you're saying maybe we're at the tail end of something rather than in the sort of the middle part of the distribution. I can understand saying maybe we make a move now, because as you said, the Giannis thing apparently squared away, and Lord knows what the situation is with LeBron in LA and yada, yada, yada. I don't know that there's going to be a better player you could reasonably get than Jimmy Butler at this point. I wonder how gettable he would be for the kinds of teams he'd want to go to, though. And maybe that's the thornier part of this discussion.
Right. I wonder two things. One, does this happen? Does this trade report from Shams Charania at ESPN that shook up the league, right? Like, there were whispers that they were headed for a divorce, Jimmy Butler and the Miami Heat, that, like, you know, like 3 years ago, you know, when Jimmy Butler and Eric Spoelstra got into it at the sidelines and everyone was like, oh, they're done. Like, there's no way that Jimmy Butler and Eric Spoelstra and the Miami Heat are going to stay together. And then they go and they have an amazing playoff run, one of the most dominant playoff runs we've seen from the Miami Heat right after that. And then I just kind of thought, hey, whatever I'm hearing about the Miami Heat, it can't end this way. It's not going to end it. They're probably going to do it, run it back one more time. But there's two things that I point to that may have changed that. One, the Brandon Ingram injury in New Orleans might have kind of changed the math on what the market says, who's the best player available for a team that's looking to upgrade at the trade deadline. Maybe the Miami Heat are looking at this situation and saying, like, who else are you going to put in your assets for? Like, all these teams that are going to go into a bidding war for a big time player, maybe you can talk yourself into Brandon Ingram. But right now, I think Jimmy Butler is far and away the best player that can be had at the deadline. And so maybe Brandon Ingram would be kind of lose a little bit of leverage in trade talks, where some teams would be like, yeah, you know, we love Jimmy, but he's 35. How much can we really expect? You know, how many more miles does he have on those tires? We can go get Brandon Ingram and get a guy who can get us buckets and be kind of that big offensive force that we need and see what happens. He's an expiring contract. We can make do. If he does well, we can sign him to an extension. But he's hurt. Then this other thing that happened. Tyler Hero has become unbelievable, right? 24 years old. He destroyed the Los Angeles Lakers about a week ago. And he is the alpha on this team offensively now. He has definitely assumed the throne as the number one guy. Maybe that changes in the postseason. But I think if you're the Miami Heat, you got Bam Adebayo, who's 27 years old, and Tyler Hero, 24 years old. And then you got a bunch of young kind of in-between pieces that maybe this Jimmy Butler timeline, you want to accelerate the youth movement. Just be like, yeah, let's try to find someone a little bit younger that can play with Tyler and Bam for the next 5 years. And I wonder, does this trade happen if Tyler Hero, or does this putting him on the trade block happen if Tyler Hero isn't kind of showing that he can be the guy? He is showing that he can be the guy. But then, of course, you look at, you know, the different trade possibilities, the market out there, the players that the Miami Heat can get, who's going to play next to Tyler Hero, who's a good fit. Those are all tough possibilities, tough questions they have to figure out. And really, Jimmy Butler does seem like he's recognizing his usage rate has followed the last four seasons from 27 to 26 to 24. And now at, like, basically a role player at 21% usage rate. Kind of feel like Jimmy Butler is knowing, like, I'm going to basically play prevent defense on this team right now and figure out a way to stay healthy in case I need to be traded. We're going to get into some of those trade destinations, those possible trade suitors right after the break. You've got some four numbers that we're going to get into, four trade destinations that I can't wait to talk about right after the break. All right, Dan, as we do every week, every Thursday here at The Big Number, we're going to do four little numbers around this topic of Jimmy Butler and the trade possibilities with him. Before we get into that, just want to mention, this is Shams Charania's report. Jimmy Butler's agent, Bernie Lee, has indicated in league circles that Butler is open to destinations such as two of the Texas teams. Remember, he's from the Houston area, the Houston Rockets and Dallas Mavericks, as well as the Golden State Warriors. Above all, though, he is believed to prefer a win-now title contender in any trade. So, Dan, there's a list of title contenders out there. Not as many that have the trade assets to go get a guy like Jimmy Butler, but what is the number one team that you want to talk about first about Jimmy Butler's trade destinations?
I think first, let's just move it out of the way because it's on that list. The Dallas Mavericks, the best I could do on a big number for them was zero because I have zero idea how they'd make it happen. Basically, if they were going to try to make a deal for Jimmy Butler with, as you mentioned, that $48.8 million salary, it would mean kind of gut renovating the depth that they've got with PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford, maybe even like Klay Thompson being in there. Like it would basically mean trading from the bulk of their rotation. So it's possible. I'm not saying anything's not going to happen. Things are always, there's always creative accounting and ways to make things happen. But for the purposes of this discussion, I could not figure out a way to make it work. And, we'll let smarter people than me do that. So Dallas will not factor into our discussion today. The first number I want to get to, and it's an actual number that we could work with, is 24.5. And that is the average age of the Houston Rockets roster, which, according to basketballreference.com, is the fourth youngest roster in the NBA. Pretty good considering that Houston is in third place in the West at 16-8, second in the West or in the NBA in defensive efficiency. They've been monsters under Ime Udoka. They're building something kind of really interesting and special there in Houston. Six of their top eight players are 22 or under. And so they've got some vets, including Fred VanVleet and Dylan Brooks, up at the top of the rotation. There's a lot of guys who don't have any postseason experience. And for a team that has stated its goal is not just to make the playoffs this time around, but to advance in the playoffs this time around, Ime Udoka's not waiting around for this. You could sort of see maybe an idea behind trying to go out and get a proven postseason performer like Jimmy, who, as a fun stat on top of that, game score, so kind of like single game PER, Jimmy's got five of the top 50 playoff games in Basketball Reference's database. So like he is he's one of those guys.
That's ridiculous. He's got how many?
Five of the top 50.
He's got 10% of the best postseason performances to one guy who is in the regular season like a solid player, but in the postseason, one of the best ever. Unreal.
Absolutely. So you can look at it and say, temperamentally seems to make a ton of sense on a team that is about beating you up on defense and being sort of tougher than you, which under Ime Udoka, the Rockets have been, and maybe a hand-in-glove fit stylistically for the way they like to play. Does that sort of make some sense to you? Does that feel to you like something that could be a fit, and how would you see them sort of going about it?
Well, you know the Miami Heat want to get value back, right, Dan? Like, you're going into those trade talks and you're saying, give me Amen Thompson, give me Tari Eason, give me Jabari Smith, give me those guys. Like, I want one of those guys in this trade. I want one of those young dudes, Reed Shepard, the number three overall pick. I am sure that they're going into those trade discussions, if they're going to be had, that they want one of those young gems, young top prospects, guys who fit the mold of what you want for the Miami Heat, who have had ties to the Kentucky Wildcats in the past. You look at Bam Adebayo and, of course, Reed Shepard from Kentucky last season. Tyler Hero, of course, from Kentucky, Blue Blood. I also think this trade proposal is very interesting, that I wrote about at TomTheFinder.com a couple of weeks ago, talking about the optionality that the Houston Rockets have. What you're describing is 100% right. They are a really young team that could play out the string and just say, we're going to just play with this core and see how this goes for the next few years. We don't need to trade for Jimmy Butler. Our dudes are 22. Look at what the Oklahoma City Thunder are doing. You know, they're still building internally. And yes, they got Isaiah Hartenstein in free agency last year. Yes, they traded for Alex Caruso, but they did it after they went through the playoffs one time, the playoff grinder last year. And maybe the Houston Rockets just stand pat. But what if, like, the Miami Heat want to kind of still go for it and put, like, a deal surrounded Fred VanVleet and Steven Adams? And going the other way is Jimmy Butler and Duncan Robinson. You can throw picks, whatever you want to throw in there to kind of even things out. But a structure that makes it so that both teams are still competing at a high level. The question for me in that trade idea is whether the Houston Rockets look at their point guard situation. Jimmy Butler would effectively be the point guard for the team. Dylan Brooks, Tari Eason, Reed Shepard, is he ready to step in as basically a 20 to 25 minute guy for them? Jalen Green would be also, is that a guy that can lead your point guard ball handling unit in the postseason? basically be Jimmy Butler would be the guy. And is that too much to put on his shoulders? But I ultimately think the Houston Rockets are very interesting because it's a hometown deal for Jimmy Butler. And if you're looking at a guy who, you know, made it to the NBA Finals under a system by Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra, doesn't Ime Udoka kind of fit that same grinder, like dog mentality, both ends of the floor? It does feel like that's a pretty good fit for Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, sorry. I'm just having like sort of blacking out a little bit as I think about like Jimmy, Amen Thompson, Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks, Shengun. Like that is a gnarly lineup. Like there's a lot, or Tari Eason in there, you know, move him in if you want to. The idea of Jimmy at the point being like a 6'7", you know, Wraith. Like that's, there's a lot to be frightened about there. The shooting capacity, maybe that's an issue, but yeah, I think again, temperamentally, stylistically, I think it makes a ton of sense. The fit makes a ton of sense. I think that question, the interesting thing about both where Houston is in their build and also the optionality, as you mentioned, that they've got, is maybe they don't feel super duper confident in Reed Sheppard just yet. You know, he's struggled to crack the rotation for Udoka, as you know, he's got more veteran guys that he trusts more. So maybe they think like, oh, well, we want to keep Van Vliet, which then he's got a $44 million contract that would be the bulk of the match going back for Jimmy. So maybe that's, you know, more of a complicating factor, but they can go other ways too to get to that money. You know, our guy Keith Smith at SpotTrack had reported that Houston can get to over $40 million in expiring or pseudo expiring, meaning like options or non-guarantees, tradable salary without touching a single core rotation player. So, you know, they can, maybe that's like the after December 15th and you've got Aaron Holiday available, or, you know, there's Jeff Green, there's Jay Sean Tate, there's Steven Adams expiring contract, as you mentioned. There's other ways to do it too. Like say Houston, I mean, if Miami decides we like Tyler Hero a lot, what if we had kind of two of them and bring me Jalen Green? You know, his contract with the extension kicking in next year, there's a poison pill provision, but like you can get to, there's a lot of ways they can get to the number is the point that I'm making here. So like if Houston decides they want to do this, they have a lot of potential options to put on the table for the Heat. I think the issue, the sort of two issues, one is an on-court thing and then the other is larger organizational. Houston's biggest problem right now is shooting. They are bottom third in the league in like field goal percentages from everywhere, at the rim, from mid-range, three-point line, all sorts of things. And that's not necessarily something that Jimmy addresses, right? So like if they're looking at it and saying, how do we strengthen our biggest weakness? Is he the right guy to do that? Maybe they look at it and say, doesn't really matter because we're doubling down on a strength and that's kind of the best way to do it. And then for what it's worth, Rockets general manager Raphael Stone went on SiriusXM after the Shams report. He said, quote, "Of course, my job's to be open to everything, so I'm not going to not do my job. We like this team, and we definitely don't intend to change anything, and I would be shocked if something changes this season. We like where we're at. We want to continue to develop our guys, full stop." Now, as you and I know, we've been doing this for a while. There is a large graveyard of similar statements from general managers who then went and made the exact move they said they weren't going to make because the price was too good, the player was too good, ownership said, hey, get this done, whatever the reason is. So it's worth noting, they're saying they're happy with where they are, and why wouldn't they be? But Jimmy Butler might make you an awful lot happier if you're Ime Udoka too.
I think of all the trade possibilities, that one makes the most sense as Houston for all the reasons you described. And also Fred VanVleet has a team option for next season. So, you know, he, depending on what Houston wants to do, they could bring him back next year and have another round of this sort of discussion. Is that next year, if he's on the team, they can do the same thing. So they do have that patience that, you know, you could basically run this back next year. Jalen Green gets rid of that poison pill provision and becomes basically a much easier trade piece after this season plays out. And so they will have a little bit more, you know, wiggle room next year to like run this back. But again, you saw what Pascal Siakam did for the Indiana Pacers last year, where they jumped the gun. They're like, yeah, we want to build around Tyrese Halliburton right now. And they went to the Eastern Conference Finals. They're one of the last four teams remaining in the NBA last season after they made a very similar trade for Pascal Siakam, who doesn't really fit the timeline in Indiana. They were a bunch of kids. They had, I think their average age before the trade was at 25.2, which is right around the same as the Houston Rockets. A bunch of young guys who needed a champion caliber player in Pascal Siakam. They made that trade. Last year you saw Keith Smith also pointing out last year you saw OG Anunoby going to the New York Knicks, where it was like, are they ready to compete right now? I don't know, but they did get a baller, both two-way player in OG Anunoby to accelerate that timeline. And now look at the New York Knicks. So maybe the thinking for Houston is kind of like, let's see what we have in Jimmy Butler, and then we can make a decision about Jalen Green this offseason. You're almost kind of like doing a trial run on Jimmy Butler to see if it works out, and then hopefully it does. And you've got a lot of knowledge, a lot of intel on Jimmy Butler and how he mixes in with the rest of the players on the team. I mean, just think about that. I mean, if you have Jimmy Butler and Tari Eason and Amen Thompson on the same team and Dylan Brooks, I don't know if Dylan Brooks is long for a Jimmy Butler world. I don't know how he fits into that picture, but dude, that defense would be insane. And with that kind of intensity by Jimmy Butler, wow. If I'm Houston, I'm very, very looking very hard at Jimmy Butler. But they're not the only team. They might be the most likely team in my book, but you got another one on your list?
Yeah, let's go from the Rockets to another team that last year was reportedly in on Pascal Siakam, on OG Anunoby. And this summer, looking at some other big fish that went, you know, moved teams or that were reportedly on the market. 102.4 is our second little number. That is the Golden State Warriors offensive rating when Stephen Curry is off the floor, according to Cleaning the Glass. That is about 1.5 per 100 possessions, lower than the Wizards, which is where you don't want to be at any point, generally, but certainly not right now. Not these Wizards, not this season, not this Wizards offense. Golden State has been desperate for a number two scoring option. They've been desperate for somebody who can keep the offense afloat when Steph hits the bench. This has been true kind of forever, and some of that is just the version of the offense when Stephen Curry's on the floor is not going to operate the same way when he's not on it, but it's specifically been an issue the last, you know, handful of games here, and we've seen that be, you know, the Warriors were off to their red-hot start at the beginning of the season. We talked about them and Stephen Curry being arguably the greatest offensive player since Michael Jordan here on this podcast. They've been in a little bit of a trough, and a lot of it is because the offense has just died when he's off the floor. Insert someone who, as we've said, is capable of, even on a lower usage rate, 19, 20 points a game, super efficient shooting. He's a little bit more isolation heavy, and his preferred pace might not necessarily jive with the way that Steve Kerr wants to play all the time, but super low turnover, super high efficiency scoring, organizing things could be a really good counterbalance for what the Warriors do. And then you think about how he would fit next to Stephen Curry, next to Draymond Green, the kind of perfect wing to bridge those two guys. There's something there, it feels like, especially as we talked about, the Warriors were big game hunting last season. They were reportedly in on Paul George, reportedly in on Lowry Markkanen. Every time something comes up, you hear Joe Lacob's name associated with it. So Golden State Warriors as a potential Jimmy Butler team, what say you?
Yeah, very interesting. They've, like you said, they've been striking out on that big guy that they've wanted to get. Pascal Siakam, Lowry Markkanen, OG Anunoby, all these names. I really thought Markkanen was the guy. And then Utah just totally screwed that up by signing him to the extension and basically making him trade ineligible for the entire season. But the question I have for the Warriors is Jimmy Butler the guy who can basically be Andrew Wiggins, where it's like this high energy guy who can guard the opposing team's best wing, and Klay Thompson at the same time, and fit into that kind of movement off ball offense that is the Steve Kerr just trying to figure out a way to, have guys chasing Stephen Curry all the time, and the alpha dog mentality of Draymond Green and that leadership by Stephen Curry. You insert a guy like Jimmy Butler, you have to make sure he's the right personality and temperament for the team. And when Andrew Wiggins is right, like, he can be a championship, you know, top three player on your team. We know that because they did it a few years ago. And so would the Miami Heat want to take back Andrew Wiggins? Would they take back a young, you know, kind of Brandon Podziemski type player where he's a young piece that you can kind of put next to Tyler Hero as a ball handler? But he's not Fred VanVleet. He's not someone that you can plug in right away and still compete.
Right.
And if you're the Golden State Warriors, you got three first round picks that you can put into a trade. How many of those are you willing to give up for Jimmy Butler? Because I don't know if there's anything right now that the Miami Heat are jumping, you know, maybe it's Kuminga. Maybe they see Kuminga next to Bam Adebayo and say, we got a dude who might not be, you know, the best defender at the four, and he's just super athletic and he has just the bones of a star player. Maybe he can work next to Bam and Tyler Hero. Maybe they take that trade. But it's not as seamless as I think the Houston Rockets, right? It doesn't feel like it makes as much sense from a, I guess, asset and just temperament. I don't know if Jimmy Butler fits the same system in Golden State as he does in Houston.
I hear what you're saying. I don't like it. What I'm going to say to you is that I think that there are a couple of factors here. You're on Stephen Curry's timeline, right? Age range. The Warriors have tried to run parallel timelines. Hasn't worked so hot. You are on the one that's the one sacred timeline is the one that has Stephen Curry in it. And you need to surround him with the kind of superstars that he is, can get him where he needs to be. Jimmy fits neatly into that, right? Jimmy and the off-ball movement thing. Jimmy, 1.54 points per possession on cuts this season. It's about 9% of his offense. He fits really, really well as an off-ball guy.
That's true.
He's had to work in a lot of half-court congestion in Miami and make Magic work with sort of slick interior passing and heady movement. He might fit there kind of neatly. And then to the larger point of, like, again, ways to skin the cat, the Warriors have more ways to get to that number, right? Wiggins is almost certainly going to have to be part of it. His salary, D'Anthony Melton, unfortunately, the fact that he is out for the season is a huge bummer. He was a sensational addition at the start of the season when he was healthy, really important in that Warriors defense that continues to be top five, but was really like ramped up heavy when he was there. But he's got a $12.8 million expiring contract essentially now then. So you add Wiggins to Melton, that gets you into the ballpark pretty quickly. Kuminga, again, I think you're right to note him as a potential swing piece, 22 years old, a little bit closer to the timeline of Tyler Hero, Bam Adebayo, and maybe a bridge to whatever comes next there. And then there's like the mid-rangey salaries or the lower tier salaries where it's like, all right, if it's Wiggins, Melton, Kuminga, all right, is it Trayce Jackson-Davis or Gui Santos at the edge there with your, maybe like you get a better prospect but a worse pick, that kind of thing, right? Or if you don't want to move Kuminga in the deal, maybe it's Gary Payton II, who has, I believe, a $9 million expiring contract. Pajemski could be part of that too if you're looking at younger guys. So there's more sort of options that Mike Dunleavy Jr. can provide. And so I think that's the kind of thing where if there's a will to maximize the Steph Draymond window to the best of their ability and a way to get to a package, Golden State might fit about as well as anybody outside of Houston and maybe be more motivated because they're not looking at it and saying, we're building for the long haul here. They know what they got to do. Jimmy might be the best way to do it.
Well, and I think they know that there are 16-win players and 82-game players. And Jimmy Butler is one of those 16-win players.
Draymond's the one who said that. Draymond's the one who gave that quote.
Exactly. And Jimmy Butler is on that short list of 16 win guys, right? And you might say, dude, the guy misses too much. He can't be depended on. But the numbers do suggest that this guy, when the playoffs come, he is available. If you look at the numbers in the six seasons that he's with the Miami Heat, he on average misses 25% of the regular season games, right? So about 20 games he misses a year.
Yeah.
But in the postseason, he's only missed two games. 64 of the Miami Heat's 66 games, Jimmy Butler has played on them. So you know that if you're Stephen Curry and Draymond Green, you want one of those 16-win players. There's not many of them in the NBA, and Jimmy Butler is one of them. He's on the short list. So I'm already talking myself into it. At first, I didn't like this kind of marriage between Jimmy Butler's personality and the Golden State Warriors and what he brings. But I kind of feel like if you're trying to extend this Stephen Curry window, Jimmy, there's not another Jimmy Butler really that you can point to, or a guy who's that good that can be available. And you know what? Bird in the hand. Like at some point, you got to pull the trigger on a lot of these trade assets to make Stephen Curry and Draymond Green and maximize that championship window. So I really like Houston as a possibility. I like the Golden State Warriors, but they're not the only two, right?
They're not. And let's talk about a team that is vying with those two teams right up near the top of the Western Conference standings. This one is not one of the preferred destinations, right? It was not in the list that that Shams Charania reported, but let's have some fun. The next little number is 1,205. Not actually a little number, but That is the combined number of minutes thus far this season for Jalen Wells and Jake LaRavia as the small forwards on the Memphis Grizzlies. Neither of those guys has any postseason experience. Of course, Wells being a second round rookie and Jake LaRavia basically being at the edge of the rotation for 3 years. Sub number here, 3 or 4, which is how many first round picks the Grizzlies were reportedly willing to give up for Mikal Bridges or OG Anunoby because they knew they needed a big wing to connect their superstar backcourt, Ja Morant and Desmond Bane and Jaren Jackson Jr. up front. If you were willing to go to those lengths to go get OG Anunoby, to go get Mikal Bridges, obviously not one for one style of players, like not the same style of players as Jimmy Butler. If Jimmy Butler's out there and available to be that kind of connect the two ends of the team on the wing, maybe there's something to be said for saying, we love what you've given us, Jalen Wells. We respect what you've done here for us, Jake LaRavia, even though we didn't get tender you a qualifying offer to keep you around beyond next year. But when it comes to finding 16-game players for a team that we think should be a championship contender, maybe we go for Jimmy Butler.
Here's why I love that idea. Jimmy Butler is a transition menace. He's a dude who gets out on the floor and he is so sure-handed and so smart and so strong around the basket. You know what team leads the NBA in transition plays? It's the Memphis Grizzlies.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense because we're talking about them.
By far the best transition team or most high volume transition team that loves to get up and down the floor. Of course, Ja Morant on that team. But then you look at, you know, Jimmy Butler, who has, like, right now, he's shooting 79% effective field goal percentage in transition plays. He ranks third in points per play in transition among the 156 players with at least 40 transition plays this season. He has 2 turnovers in transition, which is absurd. That's it.
Like, that's it.
That he has, like, the lowest turnover percentage in transition. And you go back, like, Jimmy Butler in the postseason, yes, the game slows down a little bit, but he's great in the half court too. He's not an excellent three-point shooter, but in the postseason, his three-point rate goes up and so does his field goal percentage. And so I do think he kind of switches modes in the postseason where playoff Jimmy just becomes like a 20% better player and more modern NBA player. And if you're looking at Ja Morant and being like, we need to keep you healthy and we need to get another guy, another horse to ride in transition and a guy to ease off that just that helter-skelter play of basketball that the Memphis Grizzlies do, Jimmy Butler's your guy. The problem is with that is that if you're going to trade Jimmy Butler, you're going to probably have to give up Marcus Smart in that deal. And it's kind of like, not a Pyrrhic victory, but it's like, why are we trading away a guy who we acquired to be that dog, both ends of the floor, championship mentality, championship metal, and now you're going to go trade for an older version of that? Maybe you look at Marcus Smart and say he doesn't have what it takes offensively to kind of lead our unit when Ja Morant needs another guy. Is he that player? But Marcus Smart's looking pretty good recently. I don't know if you make that trade. And how dare you besmirch Jake LaRavia saying that he's on the outskirts. That's my Wake Forest Demon Deacon right there.
He's not anymore. He's in full marks to him, tons of credit. He has worked his way into, like, the Grizzlies said we didn't want to, or they declined to extend him heading into the season. He has looked at it and said, this is my chance to earn my next contract. And he's been balling out. He's been playing fantastic. So full credit to him. Jimmy Butler's a little bit of a different kettle of fish though. And so I think the point on Marcus Smart is, he's averaging about 21 minutes a game and coming off the bench now. And so if you're looking at it and saying, how do we maximize our opportunity here? If we can package together several of these salaries, similarly, like Luke Kennard, 1 year, $9 million-ish kind of salary with Marcus Smart. The issue to me there is, like, it's when you get into the rest of the rotation, right? Like, Brandon Clark probably needs to be part of that package to get to the money. Yep. And he has been starting next to Jaren Jackson Jr. and been sensational, now a year and a half or so removed from his Achilles rupture, like fully all the way back and playing great. And so then you're like, in order to get that big wing that we're looking for, am I cannibalizing my depth in the front court? Does that mean that we are now going to need to be overly reliant on Zach Edey, who has been plagued by injuries early in his rookie season? There's some you know, issues to kind of figure out there. But again, with the way the Grizzlies are built, with their super, super deep, and there's a lot of guys, like they are ripe for a consolidation trade, it feels like, if they see this as the opportunity to. I'm going to stay away from pull the trigger with the Grizzlies, if that's cool by you. But but if they see an opportunity to seize, let's put it that way, you know, Smart, Clark, Luke Kennard, John Conchar, Vince Williams, there's guys you can sort of put into deals and try to find a way to it. It's just a question of whether Zach Kleiman in that front office looks at it and says, is this the opportunity that we've got to seize? And is Jimmy the guy to seize it for? Maybe not. Maybe that's pie in the sky. It's an interesting thought experiment to me, though.
Yeah.
Let's get out of here on the fourth little number, okay? 0.232, a legitimately little number, smaller than one. Far smaller than one, in fact. That is the Cleveland Cavaliers' free throw attempt rate. Free throw attempt rate is how often a team gets to the free throw line compared to the number of field goal attempts that they shoot. And the Cavs are 26th in the NBA in free throw attempt rate. This is not necessarily indicative of a failing offensive ecosystem. The Cavs are awesome on offense, and the other teams that are down at the bottom of that ranking include the Knicks and the Thunder, also very good on offense. But the ability to manufacture tough points against the kind of defenses you're going to see if you're the Cavs going through the Eastern Conference playoffs, you might want to be able to say, we got another way to get something going in the half court. Somebody who's going to chisel his way into good looks, be able to get to the line when we need something. And so if there's one thing Jimmy Butler's going to do, it's get to the line. He leads the NBA this season in free throw attempt rate among dudes who've played at least 250 minutes. And here's a really fun one. According to StatHead, 525 players have logged at least 5,000 NBA minutes since Jimmy debuted all the way back in 2011. Jimmy is 11th among those 525 players in free throw attempt rate, and he's the second among non-centers. So every 10 of the or 9 of the 10 players ahead of him are centers. Makes sense, right? They're always around the basket, getting hacked when they go to get shots up. Who's the other non-center? Who is the other non-center who's above Jimmy Butler in this sample, Tom? I'll give you $1 million if you can guess this one.
And the minimum is how much? 500?
5,000 minutes. So somebody who played real NBA basketball over the course of his career since 2011 when Jimmy came into the league.
I mean, I want to say it's Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, but that can't be right. I don't think he's got enough. No, he does. He does. He probably has enough minutes, but it's not him.
It's not him. It's someone with a very similar game, though. So I see where you're going. Tyler Hansbrough. Tyler Hansbrough.
What?
Tyler Hansbrough. 734 free throw attempt rate up near.
Psycho T?
Psycho T. He doesn't want it with Ron Artest, but he does want it with getting to the free throw line. Tyler Hansbrough, shouts out to you. I'm glad we got you on the big number this week. That said. A few weeks back when we talked about the Cavs at the start of the season, you were like a little lukewarm on them as a real championship contender because it was like, you know, we've seen them get out to these big leads in the regular season, but do they really have what it takes, especially on the wing, when you get to April, May, and June? Jimmy Butler would be a pretty attractive addition April, May, and June, no?
Yeah, a couple notes on that. The Cleveland Cavaliers, I think Isaac Okoro can be traded in January 15th.
Yep.
So basically 1 month before the trade deadline or a couple weeks before the trade deadline. And if you're going to make a trade with the Cleveland Cavaliers, I think he's going to probably be in the deal.
Yeah.
Tristan Thompson also trade eligible this Sunday. In case the Miami Heat want to get in the Tristan Thompson business, he's also a trade restriction. Luke Kennard, you mentioned with the Memphis Grizzlies, he's December 15th. As well as Wells, he as a rookie scale free agent, you know, second round pick last year. He is a trade restricted until this weekend. DeAnthony Melton, Buddy Hield, Slow-Mo, also for Golden State, trade restriction until Sunday. And Aaron Holiday with the Houston Rockets. I forgot to mention all this while we were talking about those other teams, but Cleveland doesn't have too many restrictions that are going to be lifted here this weekend, which means that maybe this drags out a bit. And they play a game of chicken between Cleveland and Miami. A lot of history between those two teams.
Yeah.
Don't have to go deep into that. But the idea is, you know, maybe the Houston Rockets and Golden State Warriors get a little bit, you know, apprehensive and not really putting all their chips to the middle. And then Cleveland comes out here and says, hey, the East is there for the taking. Let's go all in. Look, I think Jimmy Butler... And look at, I mean, imagine that starting lineup. right? Darius Garland, I mean, Donovan Mitchell, Jimmy Butler, Evan Mobley, and Jared Allen as a starting five.
You could go do some stuff with that five.
I mean, as we've talked about, this is a big five NBA where you need multiple bodies, multiple stars, and those are basically five all-star caliber players that can go toe-to-toe with the Boston Celtics and the New York Knicks. That's basically what they're doing, is like, we need to fill out an entire five-man unit that is basically all-star caliber. That's really interesting, man. Like, Dan, like, that's really interesting. They'd have to gut a few of their pieces and their depth to make that trade happen, but that would make the East really interesting. Is Pat Riley willing to trade Jimmy Butler to the Cleveland Cavaliers to essentially put them into the title contention talks? I don't know. I don't know if he has the stomach for that, but then again, no one really knows what Pat Riley's up to these days. I think what you're seeing is a team that Cleveland, they might say, this is our window and we got to go all in. We're not going to beat Boston and New York as it stands now unless we have one of those guys who's gone deep in the postseason before, and Jimmy Butler is that guy. Man, I like those four teams. Like, I feel like any one of those, if they traded for Jimmy Butler, I would nod and be like, yeah, that makes sense. Like, I could talk myself into all four of those teams. Like, the Lakers, I can't. Orlando, I can't. Like, I don't see another good fit. Like, Dallas doesn't really make sense for the reasons you mentioned at the top. But Houston, Golden State, Memphis, Cleveland, step on up for the Jimmy Butler sweepstakes. Let's go. All right. We got to hit a break here. Coming back, we're going to revisit some old over-unders. And we got one that I really want to talk about with you, Dan. Speaking of dogs, we got to talk about some Dobermans. It happened. It happened.
What happened, Tom? Tell. Is everything okay?
Everything's not okay over here at the Haverstro HQ. I have surrendered my lead in the over-under competition, the friendly competition that we have here. Yeah.
I'm raising the roof like a 42-year-old man, Tom. I'm very excited about this.
Let's go. Let's go.
Objects in the rearview mirror, Tom. They're getting closer to you.
All right, here's the scoreboard, Dan, if I must. 13-13. You don't have the lead quite yet, okay? 13-13. We're doing pretty good, actually, in terms of these over-unders. I don't know if Vegas needs to investigate our prognostication powers here, but we've hit 68% of our over-unders so far. 13 out of 19, we've basically predicted correctly here. So
I love that.
I feel like, Dan, the whole thing is going to swing on the Oklahoma City Thunder because of this guy right here. It's Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. We put the over-under at 8 free throw attempts for Shai. He, up until last week, 3 games ago, he had averaged 7.963, whatever, free throw attempts per game. And now he, over the last 3 games, he is exactly 8 free throw attempts per game.
Man.
And it is hovering right there at 8. You took the under, I took the over, and that's really swinging this whole thing. But it really is an opening for us to talk about how good these Thunder are. They lost Chet Holmgren, and they are still right now on track to be the best defense this century, maybe ever. They are 9 points better defensively than average. 9 points every 100 possessions, which, as you pointed out from PBPstats.com, would be the best of all time relative to league average.
Man.
Dan, like, they just destroyed the Dallas Mavericks. Luka Doncic looked like completely neutered out there because of the dogs, the Dobermans, whether it was Lou Dort. And then they got, Alex Caruso, by the way, Kaysen Wallace. These guys are insane. And I think Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, of course, a perfect 39 points, which he doesn't like scoring 40 points. He just wants to be that metronome out there. OKC, like we put the over-under at 750 win percentage. Right now, they're on pace for 790. That's a 65 win team. OKC is so good, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, hot take, they're really friggin' good. That was, you mentioned the win in the NBA Cup quarterfinals over the Mavs. That was Dallas's second worst offensive performance of the season in terms of their scoring efficiency. It's worth noting, just so that we don't wind up dealing with, you know, swaths of angry Mavs fans, PJ Washington, noted Thunder killer, not available last night, was not on the court. So you got to give them that. And he's hugely important in that matchup. We saw that in the postseason last year. We saw it. He went 27-17 against them last month. But the whole idea with Oklahoma City after that Dallas series last year was like, well, our weaknesses are on the glass. And in terms of having Josh Giddey be someone you could sag off of on the offensive end to make it easier to load up against Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Jalen Williams and the rest of our drive and kick guys. All right, so they go get Isaiah Hartenstein, and then all of a sudden, the Mavs aren't dominating the glass anymore last night. And they get Alex Caruso, who is making huge contributions in terms of tipping out offensive rebounds, creating extra possessions. Another guy
doing Alex Caruso things.
Doing general Alex Caruso things, yes, wreaking havoc in a headband. And the structure of it, as you say, you bring it all comes back to the defense. The only other team I could think of that could do what Oklahoma City did, where it's, we are blitzing every Luka Doncic pick and roll. We are going to make you uncomfortable constantly. We are going to get you off the ball as often as possible. We are going to make other guys beat us. And you know what? If we get 15 corner threes for Quentin Grimes, we'll deal with that. And maybe we go down like we did to PJ Washington and Derek Jones Jr. last year, but we have a blueprint to make you uncomfortable. Only other team that I could think of doing that and then being so confident in their rotations behind it, their rim protection behind it, on a string, we're nailing it. It's the Celtics. It's the only other team in the league that I could think of that's like, they can throw that at Luka or at Kyrie and then feel super confident in everybody else behind it. And you combine that with, they shot threes like the Celtics last night too, where they you know, I think it was like 30 something in the first half. And Shai being an insolvable equation, like, it's looking really, really good, Tom.
Here's a number for you. Isaiah Hartenstein, which I know we talked about it in the offseason. People, sickos in the NBA, knew how good this guy was in the addition for him for the Oklahoma City Thunder. In 265 minutes this season, he has been on the floor. The Thunder have a 113.1 offensive rating. Chet Holmgren, when he was on the floor for 265 minutes, so 2 minutes fewer, we basically have a sample size of both players. Hartenstein, which is kind of crazy that Hartenstein's already played more than Chet Holmgren this year for the Thunder. Wow. Hartenstein's offensive rating, or the team's offensive rating with Hartenstein on the floor, 113.1. With Chet Holmgren, that was 113.4. So negligible difference, right? Your backup center, when he's inserted into the lineup, no, you're not subtracting at all, basically, offensively. Defensively, with Isaiah Hartenstein on the floor, the Thunder, 99 defensive rating, and Chet Holmgren, 96.8. The net rating for Isaiah Hartenstein on the floor, 14.0. The net rating for Chet Holmgren on the floor, 16.6. There's no difference. You have Hartenstein on the floor, Chet Holmgren, they're still going to kill you. And they're going to have those guys, when healthy, hopefully, for 48 minutes a game in the postseason. And that, to me, there's no drop-off. There's nothing. It's like you put a guy who has a very different skill set than Chet Holmgren out there as kind of this hub of the offense, who is a ferocious offensive rebounder and defensive rebounder, who can do a great passer. Chet Holmgren's awesome. But they're two different skill sets, and they have basically a dominant point differential on both ends of the floor, regardless of who's on the floor, Chet or Isaiah Hartenstein. This team is awesome. I'm doubling down. I said that I think they're going to upset the Boston Celtics if they meet in the NBA Finals because of the Hartenstein and Caruso additions. I just think they fix their weaknesses. And everything that's happened this year, I'm like, yeah, Yep, they're the team. They're the team, 19-4, and they're it's the best point differential to start the season through 24 games in OKC history. I'm not talking about Seattle. I'm just talking OKC. Like, that's it. With Kevin Durant, Serge Ibaka, Russell Westbrook, James Harden, they've had a better point differential through their first 24 games than those guys ever did.
Yeah, it's bonkers. I mean, it is very rare in this league that everything winds up working out the way you thought it would. Like, the projection actually comes to fruition, and they are looking exactly as dangerous as they seemed. I can't wait to see what they look like if they get, you know, Chet and Hartenstein on the floor at the same time. They can scale up and play huge. They can go centerless as they did when those guys were hurt. There's a lot of ways they can hurt you, and we'll see how they continue to hurt people in the NBA Cup, because they're moving on to Vegas, and we'll see where they go from there.
I'm circling the Vegas dates, but also Sunday, January 5th, 3:30 Eastern, Boston comes to OKC. That's going to be great. That's going to be great. I can't wait. Next Thursday, we'll be back. Jimmy Butler might be traded by then. Who knows? But Jimmy Butler is not going to OKC, I don't think. I don't think they're going to go and make that trade. They're
that
gonna
would
go
be
with
hilarious. But yeah, sure.
Yeah. Next week, we'll be back with one more big number before the holiday. And I want to thank Emmy for producing this week's episode of The Big Number. And of course, everybody behind the scenes at Yahoo Sports for making this happen. And thank you to all the listeners out there, the little numbers out there who are listening. Please give us a 5-star rating. Also subscribe, tell your friends about it. And we'll talk to you next week. Thanks so much, Dan.